Good morning, everyone. Filling in for Greg this morning. Paul Grubbs will be covering for him Wednesday night. Luke chapter 18. We are introduced to what we know as the Pharisee and the publican being at the temple. Some of the parables that we've looked at so far have leaned toward similar discussions as to comparing behaviors, what some at the time were thinking were correct, and Jesus basically having to straighten them out, that it's not what you think or things aren't the way they seem. And here we enter into a situation with extreme opposites, going to the temple between a Pharisee and a publican. Let's read through this, starting in verse 9 of Luke chapter 18. And it says, "He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself, 'God, I thank you that I am not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all that I get.' But the tax collector, standing some distance away, was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, the sinner.' And I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted." Now, we've seen the Pharisees quite a bit, and the type of people they are. And why is this parable spoken? What does the text reveal to us for the purpose of this? All right, and most likely this deals with the Pharisees themselves, because they were, even amongst the people, regarded as the knowledgeable ones. Those that would be the go-to for answers between them and the scribes. And Jesus, we've seen in some of the parables, he has made statements that the disciples are kind of shocked at. You know that, you know, these people were offended by what you said. But Jesus spoke what was needed to be said, and he hoped they understood it. And sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. But this one, you know, there's pretty much no getting around, I would assume, from the language that is used, since the Pharisee is mentioned. The Pharisees, we know that they're the strictest keepers of the law. Yet as a result, we see some of the other verses reveal to us that even though they wanted to adhere to the law, the laws they came up with tend to be more important. What they say goes. And they consider themselves more righteous. Now the publican. Who is the publican or the tax collector? Why are they so evil or so looked down upon? And all right, they are turncoat. Now, we hate the tax man ourselves, but to this point, the way the Jews felt about themselves, they're God chosen people, they should be an entity of their own, and here one of their own has gone to work for the invader. And as was stated many times, they're cheating. They're tacking on more than they need and lining their own pockets. And we see Zacchaeus' rendering, "If I have, you know, cheated anyone, I'll return to it fourfold." So that seemed to be a common practice. Now, they're also, even though they're a Jew, and, you know, the tax collector is an upstanding job, that they're lumped in with the Gentiles and the adulterers and other sinners, as we see from Luke 15 and Matthew 18. They are the lowest of the low, probably in there with the dogs of the Samaritans as well. So you have the two contrasted in this particular situation. Now, the Pharisee's prayer. The New American Standard at least renders it, I thank you that I. What's the problem with the Pharisee's prayer, the so-called righteous man, in the people's eyes? All right, he's making the self-righteousness comes to the front. I am the important one. He thanks God, but there's no thankfulness to God. We thank God for sending His Son, thank Him for our daily bread, the brethren that we have here. But the Pharisees' actions are, I'm better than this guy over here. He takes no notice of God really in this, even though he's come to the temple to pray, which, isn't an ordered thing according to the law, but had become a regular, I don't know if his custom is the right word, but it was a regular action of the people to come to the temple to pray at various times. Brother Earnhardt mentioned that at the early and late sacrifices, people would do that. And we even see Cornelius praying in a certain hour of the day and others going and doing the same. So coming to the temple wasn't an out of the ordinary situation to bring themselves or to pray to God. But he's taking no notice of God, but everything around him. And in this case, the Pharisee sees the publican, the tax collector, standing there, and he wants to, I'm even better than especially this guy, and takes no notice of what he should be praying for, looking inward instead of outward. Now, the publican, on the other hand, what do we see about his presence at the temple that is so different? Okay, he's come, but and there's a lot of realization in his heart that I'm not worthy to be here. But he understands this. He's come for a reason to approach God. The temple, for the most part, represented the presence of God to the Jews. At least to those who had a good heart and a righteous heart. That was the intent of having a house of worship in their presence, for God's presence to be there. What else does the language of the verses there tell us? Not only is he not willing to lift his eyes up, but what else? All right, he considered himself a sinner. All right, he wasn't even willing to come up close to the temple. So he is in complete submission and understanding of his state. And as we look at the contrast between the two, the one who thinks he's righteous, is the roles are actually reversed here. In that, and Jesus says as much. He says this latter one, he goes away justified because he realizes he needs God and he wants his mercy. And the Pharisee does not recognize any of that. He doesn't think he's wrong. He doesn't think he's sinned. He says, I'm glad I'm not like this man and the others. We have to be careful that we don't fall into that same mindset. And that even as Christians and those who have obeyed the gospel, and submitting ourselves to Christ, that we need to do that. And we need to always keep that before our minds and be willing to approach God in that submission and not be like the Pharisee who disregards the lowly and those that need God as well. I won't say more because we all need Him the same from the standpoint of that's the only way to obtain salvation. But that we need to be willing to recognize we need God all the time. Everyone else needs God all of the time. And we should try to see that they get it. One of the things the Pharisee could have looked upon this tax collector and his submissiveness, not even willing to come up, and shown pity on him, and maybe tried to help and encourage and strengthen him. But he just ridicules. Any other comments on... That's right. And he gets their attention by bringing in one of their own and see what was going to be said. Yeah. And some of the things that Brother Earnhardt brought out about the Pharisees, one that basically they were an elite group. It's not just like they were a sect. They were a small sect. He was thinking 5,000 to 6,000 at any given time, which is a very small number in relation to the rest of the nation. So they have elevated themselves by putting on and professing a godly behavior. But as Trevor said, they get what they ask for, to be seen, be proud in their own selves. Anything else before?
One more thing.
Yep. Exactly. And this scenario also lends to why they loathed Christ so much. And as we've said, the publican, the sinners, those who needed God the most is one who Jesus attracted and who came to him. As we've seen in the other parables and other studies, it irritated the Pharisees. That's correct. Scriptures deal heavily with that. Several passages in Proverbs that we could turn to and Isaiah that emphasize our humanity. All right, anything else before we move to the laborers in the vineyard? And I'll have to admit, as I've studied through this, I was re-enlightened as to passing over. It's easy to, here's a meaning of what this means, but the emphasis of the parables is that something, when Jesus is speaking these, has presented the opportunity for him to say these parables. And what has been going on leading up to this parable? What are some of the things that had been going on in Jesus' presence and even amongst his disciples? All right. They were arguing and fighting and enamored amongst themselves about who is the greatest. And with that context in mind and some of the language used at, right before this and at the end of this, that appears to be the emphasis as to our attitude of position and receiving of things in that line. So we enter this parable in Matthew 20. And as we said, it finishes off in 19 and verse 30. It says, "But many who are first will be last, and the last first." And that, keep that in mind, because that's the way this parable is going to end as well. "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for a vineyard. And when he agreed with the laborers for a denarius for the day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And to those he said, 'You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right I will give you.' And so they went. And again he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did the same thing. And about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, 'Why have you been standing here idle all day long?' And they said to him, 'Because no one hired us.' And he said to them, 'You go into the vineyard too.'" These are daily laborers. What is the status of the daily laborers in Jesus' time? All right. Each and every day, they were needing to work. Basically, they're living from day to day, paycheck to paycheck. And if they didn't come home with a paycheck that day, family probably didn't eat the next day or that night or however the situation presented itself. Some things interesting for this, as we've seen, he's gone through five different times during the day to hire people to come tend to this vineyard. Why would you go that many times in a day? All right. It's either get it or lose it. Either because it was a short-term time for picking, or there was weather-related issues to drive and they needed to get it complete. So that gives us an idea of why so many times might be a real-life situation to they would understand. So the first batch of employees agreed to a denarius, which is the commonly evidently used daily wage, as there was. And as he comes out the second, third, and fourth times, what's the agreement for pay? All right, whatever is right, whatever that is. And basically, what does that mean? You're at... Yes, that's what it means. And you're at the mercy of the employer as to what you will get. But for those who don't get hired in the first batch and early in the morning, then their idea is, you know, I need to get something, even if it's not a full day's wage. So the deeper you go in the day, the employers are going to be that much more desperate to find work and put their mercy in the hand of the employer. All right. So they're desperate and living day to day, and they're hanging out waiting for the employees, and we've looked at the various reasons. Now, we come to that 11th hour, and these haven't been evidently approached to be hired. You know, there's basically an hour left in the day. I don't know how long they would work, but, you know, basically the idea is it's the last hour of the day and they're still going. And basically says, you two go into the field. And they really know they'll be at the mercy of the employer for whatever they get. Now, the real crux of this parable starts now with verse 8. And I don't know if this is the normal course of events that the last would get paid first or not, but it appears to be for the point of the parable. This is on purpose, that as the late arrivals start going through in reverse order, it's going to lead to, let's see what the ones at the end think. Starting in verse 8 of chapter 20, it says, when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last group to the first. And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each one received a denarius. And when those hired first came, they thought that they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. And when they received it, they grumbled at the landowner, saying, these last men have worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us. You have borne the burden, or equal to us who have borne the burden and the scorching heat of the day. But he answered and said to one of them, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours and go. But I wish to give to the last man the same as you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own? Or is your eye envious because I am generous? So the last shall be first and the first last. We can see through this, from human perspective, why the first group, first employees, might seek a better advantage or a reap a better reward for having worked all day if the last folks are going to receive a full day's wage. And as you look through this, remember back to what Jesus has been dealing with his disciples, as well as the Pharisees and others, that they look for position. They look for ranking and the high rewards of their efforts. And the disciples got caught up in that, and we would likely get caught up in that as well as human beings. And here the first, now, who gets the credit for the last ones getting a full day's wage? The landowner, the employer does. And it doesn't appear to be that he gave them as an equal billing because they did the same amount of work. He says himself there in verse 15, 16, 14, 15, you know, can I not do what I want with my own? Am I in the wrong because I am generous? Evidently, in his efforts to get his crop taken in, he also has a huge generous heart in and of himself, knowing not only is he taking care of this employee, but he's taking care of the employee and who he's going home to. I mean, that appears to be a necessity here. He provided an opportunity. Now, from a business perspective, that may or may not last too long, keep him as an employer too long if he gives money away at that rate. However, if this is a God-fearing man, God will take care of him for being generous. And, you know, everything the Pharisee wasn't in our last parable, this landowner is being merciful and treating them as if they were a full day's pay, had been there all day. And notice the focus is upon the first group and the last group. We can make the assumption that they were paid the same, but the emphasis is on the first group and the last group. And I've probably covered most of what this was. So how do we regard ourselves in service to God? Compare ourselves to the apostles in this situation, as they've argued, and even after this parable is through, there's still going to be more that comes up shortly after this, of still seeking that first and foremost spot. It won't be too long after this that James and John appear with their mother, seeking to be on the left and the right hand. So even though the apostles and the disciples are probably sitting there listening to this, it hasn't sunk in. And as we see through a lot of their teachings, a lot of things don't sink in. Even at the ascension, they're still looking for the kingdom and the power that would come with Christ being set there. And even after the power that is coming on Pentecost, there's still a learning process going on even to follow that. So it's easy to see how they would get wrapped up in it, because the normal course of kingdoms are as those who were at the left and the right hands and the help coming up as kingdoms are being established, they would be given places of prominence. And they have to learn, you know, these lessons are for us, the disciples, the special 11, 12 that there's going to be there. We have to listen and pay attention as well. Also leading up to some of this parable being discussed is Peter's aggressiveness and of, you know, we have left all. What's going to be our reward? That was a part of leading up to this as well. So that's their focus as we go through. They go through hearing this. We could easily take from this is that, you know, whoever did the work is going to receive the same pay, and we could say that's the same for us, and it is. But that's not the emphasis of of this parable, that no matter when we come into the work, we're going to reap an equal reward. But the idea should be is that whenever and whoever comes into the work should realize that we are working, that we are in service to God, and should not expect to be rewarded for what we have done. That is what the Pharisees expect. And they go through and tear the law apart, saying we do a tenth of this, and they get it down to, you know, seeds and leaves, and as they present offerings to the Lord and expect these things are going to get them their salvation. But in this parable, it reveals to us that, you know, we should work at it that hard for the time that we are in here, but realize that we are at the mercy of the vineyard, the one running the vineyard, and that would be God in our case. Is that as we go about our daily chores, our daily activities, remember that we are servants, and we're to be a servant, and not that we should necessarily be served. Some of the aspects of being a Christian is that if we are each one doing our duties, I will be able to help others get through the day, overcome problems. And the same thing is, you're doing your part, you'll be helping me go from day to day, get over problems, in ultimate hope of reaching final payday. To be a little flippant on that. The idea of, you know, keeping these passages in the realm of their context, just going in and pulling and reading this parable especially, it could lead you to one conclusion without gaining everything that sits around it to give you what the real meaning is. And that, you know, it's about who's going to be first and last. Tony. That's right. And he said that's basically where the Pharisee failed in his standing in the temple. And these first laborers looked to get paid. They should have been focused upon their agreement with the master as they went through that. Proverbs 16, verses 18 and 19. And pride is one of the things that tends to lead to a lot of this, and selfishness, when we should be selflessness, you know, in this. Proverbs 16, verse 18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before stumbling. It is better to be humble in spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Always keep ourselves in perspective of our relationship to God. We should have relationship with others, but God's relationship is first and foremost. That's where our love, you know, love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and our neighbor as ourself. Teaching Wednesday night.